This will not do. It simply will not do. Quickly, quickly, we must sprinkle you with frost.
What will it do?
Oh, you're such an idiot, you dunce, you nitwit, you donkey. You left your scepter in the house. Without it, you can't be the thing.
I enjoy watching people's mental illness.
Okay, testing. Yeah, that's working.
Hibbity, hibbity.
Yeah, that works. Okay, so Jack Frost.
Jack Frost.
You were not terribly excited.
No.
So the thing is, we decided that we would do this completely at random.
Yep.
And try to remove the temptation to like curate these. So,
yeah, that's right.
And I think this is exactly why, because I don't think this is one we would have picked if we had it up to us.
I just didn't remember it at all. I have a tendency to have a bias that I think I'm not going to like it if it's not one of the ones I can remember.
Yeah. Yeah, but this is from that season where, like you were saying, that there's so many just excellent ones, like Space Mutiny.
Yeah, this is the season. In one season, they had Overdrawn at the Memory Bank. They had Parts of the Clonus Horror. They had Time Chasers.
And Space Mutiny.
Which are like, I mean, those are like four of the best episodes they ever made.
Yeah, so this was the Sci-Fi Channel, right? This was the Sci-Fi Channel era?
This was the first season of the Sci-Fi Channel.
And... Yep. Like, they seem to have their production values together. I mean, it's Mike, and we were talking about how Mike is just so professional. Like,
yeah,
you just know there's going to be a baseline of quality to the jokes.
Yeah, he was the most buttoned up of all of the most sort of I feel like he was the best actor in a lot of ways, and like just the most kind of on top of it.
Well, and they had really good writers by that point, right? They had Mike and they had Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
And they had Bill, and then, you know, they had Mary Jo, and the jokes were well written.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So Russo Finnish folk story.
Yeah. So it gets, I think for me, it gets a lot of high marks because it was just so colorful and bizarre and like arresting, just it never let up on weirdness. Like there wasn't a moment where I was like bored, you know.
It's interesting to watch these really old folk stories because it feels like there was something that happened where we figured out how to tell stories. Like I noticed that it's so random, right? I mean at one point I was like, I wonder how much of this movie's left. Because there's very little narrative story arc. And part of it is that the individual characters in these kinds of things are not really people. Like no one seemed to really care if they were actually had realistic motivations, like as a writer, you know what I mean? Like they're just tools to either plot or just to like produce some moralistic impact, like you shouldn't be ugly or you shouldn't be a bad person.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, except for the fact that then that like about two-thirds of the way into the movie it took that deep detour into like the witch's cabin and the whole thing about the spinning house, and like all of that just felt very divergent from the main theme or the main like message.
Yeah,
and I couldn't figure out, unless it was just like what I was trying to figure out is like, did the filmmakers make up part these plot points to pad the movie and just make it long enough?
Or no, those are probably in the original folk story, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
There's probably some reason, right? There's some cultural touchstone about houses that spin or something that we're just not getting because
the whole story would have been the same without the witch and her house and her weird pig sled and all of those scenes where she's dancing around and doing little hopscotch and she's tired and then she's awake, and none of that stuff contributed to like the main message.
Well, and like, I guess she's a villain, but she's also nice at first. And I don't know. The callback with the cudgels was a nice narrative touch though, you know, coming down out of the sky.
Oh yeah. Like... Right. Yeah. So when that happened, I was like, so this is the part I feel like is in the original folklore, whatever 16th century story.
But why would you invent a part about a house spinning?
Just to pad the movie, maybe? I don't know. Like,
So I think sometimes what does happen is they combine different pieces of different folk stories together. Like maybe the spinning house is from a different story.
Oh, yeah.
Or something. I don't know.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
So I think I want to talk about, just to go back to like the Mystery Science Theater part of it, what I like about this era of Mike, and I was kind of remembering it watching the little skits in between, is that they just seem to have abandoned like any, like they were just doing whatever they wanted, right? Like they were just like having fun on set.
Well, what's funny about that, I mean, I agree with you, but also I'm thinking about how Space Mutiny, which is one of my favorite episodes of all of Mystery Science Theater, has actually pretty terrible skits. And part of what makes them bad is it feels like they're forcing some kind of plot.
Oh, yeah.
You remember with the Romans and shit?
I read that that was because the Sci-Fi Channel came around at some point. And like the Mystery Science Theater guys joke in all the interviews about how they loved doing the show until like some random producer guy would call him on the phone or come by and ask for some random change. And apparently the Sci-Fi Channel really wanted them to have like an overarching, like on-running story.
Yeah. But this is episode 813. Wouldn't you think that would also have, that plague would have infested these?
I don't know. I almost wonder if maybe the guy came by
between 813 and 820
and said, "Hey, we were watching Jack Frost."
Yeah.
And we were thinking like, could you have a plot?
But for that story to make any sense, somebody would have to have watched Jack Frost and said, this is good, but what it's missing is better skits.
Yeah, I don't know. I can tell you, I really love it when they open the movie, they open the episode with Mike, and he's, for no reason at all, he's the Irish dancer.
Yeah.
You know, and then Gypsy's like, oh, well, I better go wash some dishes. And that's it. That's the whole intro. Like, I just love the randomness of it. I love the creative freedom of expression.
That doesn't seem to have much to do with Jack Frost either, except I guess loosely that there's sort of like cultural,
sure,
folksy kind of thing.
If you like, yeah.
But
the thinnest of threads.
It's just, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, because I didn't like it overall, with exceptions. I didn't like it when they got deep into the whole, like the actual bones of Mystery Science Theater in between the movie had like a running story. It was just too confusing, and it wasn't as funny as when they're just allowed to be funny.
Well, in Space Mutiny, I think of it, it's funny because it's probably my favorite episode of all of Mystery Science Theater, but it's one of the worst skits.
Yeah. I can't give the episode a perfect 10 because the skits aren't good.
Yeah, no, they're not. And in particular, they almost have a plot, which, like, why would you want a plot in Mystery Science Theater? It's kind of the mistake they made with seasons like 12 and 13 later when, you know, they did the same thing. They were like, oh.
A little bit.
You remember in season 13, there's like the evil guy.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. And they're trying to like appease him.
Yeah.
And it's just not. It's not really that funny.
And there's like a subplot where Jonah has to marry,
right, Kinga.
Kinga.
Yeah.
And then they're, yeah.
Not necessary, man.
No.
No.
Not necessary.
No, the Lord of the Dance.
Is it just that like when you make a TV show, is it sometimes just too tempting to like start writing your own story and it's like not enough just to be funny? You have to like.
I guess so. I mean, the Sci-Fi Channel thing makes sense. It's just underinformed production folks who don't understand what makes the show appealing. The season 12-13 thing is a little harder to explain because they presumably had total creative control. Maybe it's just that Joel wanted to, I don't know, he wanted to be a real boy. Like, we're making a real TV show.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. But anyway, this episode turned out better than we thought it would.
A lot better. I was really, maybe I actually liked it more too because I was really expecting it to be dull and plotting.
Right.
I thought it was going to be one of those foreign films they watch where you're just sort of like you're baffled and it's moving really slowly and the translation's really bad. The translation might have been really bad in this movie, but it was extremely entertaining.
Yeah, I guess it didn't. It did have this kind of community theater energy to it where. I mean, at times they literally sped the film up. They're like, oh, now the horses are moving super fast.
Yeah.
And everything's wacky.
When Jack Frost was running, he just would run abnormally fast.
And they didn't hang on shots for too long, which is a common problem.
No, it was a visual feast. They kept moving things around.
Right.
Lots of random characters. A lot of unnecessary people, like all the villainous guys that come back at the end.
Right.
The last 15 minutes of the movie was so unnecessary. But it was like highly entertaining. I was just constantly like, my eyes were just wide in awe of how weird and just bizarre it was.
And of course, the moral of the story is that ugly people are evil and never get married.
Right. And that you got to be rich to be happy.
Right.
Rich and beautiful.
And if you get kidnapped by a man in the woods.
Does that say something about like Russian
culture? I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't know.
This is also like, I give this top marks for the riffing. I think this is the perfect kind of movie for them to riff on because it's already so baffling and strange. And then there's just so many different directions you can take it. Like Riff Tracks had this thing for a while where you could... They had written like three jokes for every moment. And it was this thing where you could watch the movie and you could pick which joke you wanted them to tell out loud as it went.
Okay.
And it was kind of silly, but the point they were making is like when you're watching a really good movie that's really well riffable, like a really riffable film, there's so many different directions you can take the riffing.
Yeah.
And it's like when you watch, you know, like they've done like Riff Tracks has done Manos, Hands of Fate again. I think they might have done Space Mutiny again, and they just rewrite all the jokes. They just write an entirely fresh slate of jokes, and it's still funny.
I think they've done that three times with Santa Claus versus the Martians, and there's at least three different MST-related properties that have done that one.
Right, and they're probably all hilarious because it's like the movie is so ripe for riffing, you know?
So at some point, we'll have to break apart like what we think of as the thing that makes the ideal like riffable MST episode. But yeah. I guess, so maybe this is the part where we should give it a rating. Like, what do you, so I don't know what scale we should, 1 to 10 works good, I guess?
Yeah, 1 to 10. This is hard because I feel like this is a strange one to calibrate on.
Yeah.
Like, maybe it was further in... I might give it a lower, like a 6 or a 7, but I actually like am feeling really strong about it right now, and I'm tempted to give it like a 9.
Well,
it's
not a
perfect 10.
What? So pick your number. I've got mine in my head. I'm not going to change it.
I think I'm going to say 9. Maybe I'll be wrong and change my mind later. But
I can't go that high. I'm going to go with 7. I think it's a 7.
Yeah,
because, well, one thing is I got to knock a point off for the skits. I mean, the Lord of the Dance is funny, but the skits overall kind of dragged a little bit near the end. And although it is really funny, I did find myself like maybe an hour in just being like, okay, we could move this along. Like, yeah. I don't know. When I think of nines, I think Space Mutiny would be my 9. This, because I don't know that any of them get a 10 from me. Maybe. Yeah. I guess we'll find out as we go.
Oh, yeah, there's definitely 10s in my... I know the 10s in my head already.
But I will say, I laughed, absolutely laughed out loud. The things I think I find I laugh at the most, I noticed, are just the most absurd moments. And I really do mean absurd, like in the classic definition, where you're just like, what are we doing? Like, Bill Corbett is my favorite because he loves those moments where you're like...
Yeah.
You know, it's like in Manos where they're like, oh, okay, Manos, the hands of fate. Yeah. You know, or the horrors of Spiral and the horrors of... Like, where it doesn't make any sense.
I had a favorite Bill moment, and it was probably one of yours, too, because we laughed really loud. They're running away through the woods, and he's like, and it's happening, like, really dramatically and slowly, and Bill's like, man, or Crow, he's like, I could watch this forever, and then there's just... And then the people are gone and they're still on the woods and it's just sitting there. And he's like, like he's sort of changing his mind, you know?
Yeah. You liked the, and I mean, I did too, but I wrote down the one about the Snow White and the one normal sized person.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. The original draft of Snow White. Yeah.
Yeah. At some point we'll also have to break down like the different riffing styles, because I feel like there is kind of a Bill joke, a Kevin joke, a mic joke. Like there's moments that are made for each of them. And for Bill, I really do feel like it's when things are just not making any sense. Like it, like you really just have no idea what you're even supposed to be looking at,
Yeah, that's
much
right.
less what it's supposed to mean.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill does this thing where he gets really flustered and frustrated. Like he just sort of shouts at the screen. It's funny. Mike is always like a lot chiller, you know. He's more like exhausted. He's like, why is anything? And Kevin will go for the most sort of Broadway big like reaction. Like he'll just erupt into something. And it's all the three of them are it may it, you know I there's lots of stuff I like from the Joel era and lots of stuff I like from the modern era and all the various spin-offs, you know, Cinematic Titanic and stuff. But I think there's just a magical blend that was never matched with Mike and Kevin and Bill. There was something about the three of them. They just had like the perfect chemistry. And to your point, they all had the kind of perfect counterpart to each other.
Well, whether or not, I will say this for sure. Whether Mike and Bill and Kevin are my favorite riffers is a harder question to answer, but certainly, like, if in some mythical universe I needed people to actually riff a movie and I wanted to make sure it was going to be good, I would hire the three of them. Because they're clearly the most consistent and the most professional. They're professional comedians, and you can tell. You know, they're not so professional that they suck the joy out of it, but they're like their process is not chaos, it's comedy, and they're funny, and they're consistently funny.
Yeah, I agree.
Joel was like a madcap mad scientist, you know, and then of course you got like Frank and Trace, they're nut jobs and hilarious at times, but certainly, you know, if you need it done right. Yeah, you're gonna call Mike and Kevin, and
They're reliable,
yeah,
reliably funny.
they really are. Yeah. So yeah, okay. So you give it a 9, I give it a 7. I guess that averages out to an 8.
I guess our podcast would give it an 8.
Yeah, so like, but we were, yeah. So in terms of exceeding expectations though, I would give it a 10
Oh,
because
yeah. I was thinking, I was coming in, I was like, this is going to be a 5.
yeah.
It's going to be
But
dull.
I guess there's no way it would have been, right? Because it's season 8. Like, what's the worst one in season 8?
Oh, I think there's a couple of was that Hamlet, that production, German production of Hamlet?
No, that's later. Let me look it up. I feel like that's later. That's yeah,
Let
that's
me
the
look up the
last season.
list.
That's 10, season 10.
Okay, what was an 8? So we've got, I
I
mean,
mean,
there's a
there's a few here. Oh, I know. Though you said the zombie one, the incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed zombies. You said it was like, I don't remember that one, but you said it was
I don't remember it being good, yeah.
pretty crap.
I don't know. There's a couple here that I think might be like the thing that couldn't die, Invasion of the Neptune Men. I don't have high hopes for
Is
those.
Terror from the Year 5000 the one with that machine that's got a container and they put things in there and they go to the future and they come back?
I don't remember that one at all.
I kind of think I do remember that
There's a
one.
few on here I don't remember. I remember the giant spider invasion. I remember the Clonus Horror.
Prince of Space is really good.
Riding with Death. I think that one I think I liked quite a bit. Horror of Party Beach.
I don't remember that one. The she creature? I don't remember some of these.
This could overall be, it's uneven, but it could be like one of the best seasons of Mystery Science Theater. I mean, even, yeah, but even season 9 and 10, because 9's got Puma Man and The Final
And
Sacrifice, which is
Hobgoblins.
just, and then season 10, you got your Soul Taker and your Future War and your Final Justice.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
they were, what I really like about Mystery Science Theater, I guess, is that like, barring the Netflix reboot, they went out on top. They were at their finest comedy making when they stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, really, they had never been funnier. There's some really good early ones, but they had risen to a level and they were not stopping and slowing down. And they went out on top. There's no way you can say like, oh, it was the best in the middle or something, you know?
Yeah. I think I'd have to agree with you. I mean, there's some winners from the early days,
Sure,
and I
totally.
do like Joel, but
Yeah.
yeah, when I think about my favorite episodes, they are a lot of them are in seasons 8, 9, and 10.
8, 9, and 10, yeah.
Yeah.
Final Justice.
They were picking better movies. They got rid of a lot of the gray men in the gray room talking films, you know.
Merlin's Shop of Mystical Wonders.
Yeah, Diabolique and
Overdrawn at the Memory Bank.
Quest of the Delta Knights. Yeah, we're going to have some fun with those seasons.
Yeah, yeah.
I think in general, what I've read and heard in interviews is that a lot of the original movies were picked by Frank Conniff, and Frank really liked the really dull, plotting 1950s black and white horror creature features. And that's a shame. I'm, you know, more power to him, but those movies just don't hold up as much for riffing. Like when you look back at those episodes, it's hard. It's hard to get through.
I guess it sort of depends on what you want. I mean, I remember a time in my life when I was watching Mystery Science Theater to go to sleep. And there is something comforting when I think about the traditional Mystery Science Theater mystique. I do think about like really terrible movies. But of course, those are not as funny. Like, I don't laugh as out loud as much.
Yeah.
I have a certain kind of nostalgic.
Yeah, you're fond of it.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I am too. I think what you're talking about is the difference between sort of like putting Mystery Science Theater on in the background and playing a video game or making some food or something.
Right.
Like then you want your Horrors or Spider Island to be playing, right?
Yeah.
Because it's hard, because as Space Mutiny's on, it's hard to look away.
You want
to
watch it.
It's constantly bombarding you with ridiculousness.
Right.
And you can't look away.
Right.
If you need to like multitask and just laugh in the corner, then you got to get your creature features. You got to get your the one with the eye that shoots the lasers, or the giant mantis invasion, or, you know.
Yeah, what's the, they have one of those swamp things type movies. I can't remember, with like the teenagers at the dance. I mean, I guess there's a few of those.
They all had teenagers at a dance. They really did.
Well, and the ones where like somebody, that they're so old that somebody introduces you the movie and tells you the moral at the beginning.
Oh yeah, like Ed Wood style.
Yeah.
Like, the movie you're about to witness.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Delve into the depths of Zion.
Yeah. The moment you see that guy narrating, especially if his face is on camera, you're like, this is going to be a doozy. Like, this is going to be one of those. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Track of the Moon Beast.
Okay, well, anything else sad about Jack Frost and the Russo-Finnish folk?
Definitely a weird start, but a strong one. And it's now that I think about it, I think it sets a great tone for the wackiness.
I mean, it is the epicenter. In some ways, it's kind of the center of mass of Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
Season 8.
Yeah.
You know, not one of our favorites. Because that would have been a hard start, right? If it was like Space Mutiny was number one, then where do you go from there?
I don't know. Yeah.
But with Jack Frost, it's like, that's good. That's funny, man.
Yeah. It's an above average episode with a lot of good wackiness, and it's a deep cut. It's a movie. I don't know where you would ever see it if you didn't see it on Mystery Science Theater.
No, for sure.
It probably made that movie famous in a way where no one would ever watched it again. It would have faded into the deep,
which darkness. Is frankly one of my favorite things about Mystery Science Theater. And maybe this is where we can close on, but like, I do have a admiration for Riff Trax, but if I were to quibble, I think the reason I've never fallen in love with Riff Trax is they just watch too many modern movies.
They just watch like Marvel films and shit.
And that's interesting, but it just, for me, that's not what Mystery Science Theater is. I remember the closest they came to that with Misty is when they did Atlantic Rim, you know, in season like 11 or whatever.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, guys, this is a little too, not that it's a good movie in the sense that like the storytelling is awful, but it's it has a modern storytelling. See, this is nice. Cause like I was saying, the storytelling craft isn't very good.
No, it's not.
And so that just makes it funnier.
It's almost like, I think you were saying during the movie, like this is before they figured storytelling.
Yeah. They just didn't really know how to tell a story.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And part of it, like I was saying, is these aren't actual people with their own independent motivations. Like when you learn how to be a writer, you learn things like, you know, you want to build an actual person that reacts in a way that the person would actually act in that scene. But these are not real people. These are archetypes.
Yeah. They're folk tail creatures.
And not only that, but they don't bother introducing a new character sometimes. They just overlay an archetype on an existing character because, like, right. who cares?
Right.
And so the person who represents this character trait suddenly becomes this other character trait. With no warning, and not in a character developmenting kind of way, but just in a like, oh, you happen to be standing there, now you're this, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's, yeah. Anyway, great episode to start.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Jack Frost.
I'm panic cooking.
Let's go cream some fish.
Here's a place where you can knit, Nastya, and you won't wake my darling little Mafushka. The moon is out, there's plenty of light.
Chernobyl's on fire, it's great.
It's peaceful, and it's nice and cool.
Eat it, Grandma.